the aspect about the revealed scripture, how we have the four aspects of knowledge, the Shruti, which is the Veda itself, the Smriti, which are books written on the Veda in pursuance of the Vedic version, then the behavior of the great saintly persons and acharyas, and then how we feel that we are situated following those orders and example, means which situation we find suitable. Then it goes on to mention that the every twice-born man who, relying on the institutes of dialectics, treats with contempt these two sources of the law, must be cast out by the virtuous as an atheist and a scorner of the Vedas. So here, strong point is being made that we have to accept that the Vedic literatures, the Shruti, that these are correct. That is an important element. The Shruti itself, the Smriti, is correct. It's always right. It's never wrong. Because it's coming from Krishna. It's coming from God. God spoke what is religion to Brahma. Brahma came to the sages. Right? Krishna spoke the Pancharatra to Brahma. Brahma then gave that to Narad Muni and others. Krishna spoke the essence of all the Vedas as the Chatushloki, and that was given from Brahma to Narad to Vyas and written in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see that in this, then the activities, means the laws of God, are written there in these scriptures. And we see, especially in the Puranas and like in the Bhagavatam, the example is there. So not only do we see the rules, but we see how they're being followed by the great acharyas and sages. So then, someone who does not understand this and criticizes can be understood that they're tainted with the atheistic mentality. Because then they're not understanding that this is coming from Krishna. Just like people will say, they may speculate on the Gita or not accept it as very seriously. But these are the words of Krishna. So if we don't accept the Gita, means we don't accept Krishna's words, means we don't accept Krishna. So we may say, oh yes, I'm a worshipper of Krishna, but I don't accept Gita. Then that means actually we're not fully situated in the proper personal understanding. Because we accept the person, but not what he does, what he speaks, what he desires, you know, what he orders. So like that, we must be very conscious that what the scriptures say is correct. That we have to have no doubt. That's why it's an offense to the holy name if we blaspheme the Vedic literatures or literatures in pursuance of the Vedic version. But it is important to understand that if it doesn't seem applicable, it's not because the scriptures are wrong. Because you have to apply it according to time, place, and circumstance. So in application, we may have gotten it wrong. Or of the various options that are given, we may have taken the wrong one. Or that it means the options, that they're all, you know, proper options for the Vaishnav, and we've chosen the wrong one. Or, as we were discussing yesterday, is we have the various kinds of, the various kinds of laws and conduct for different groups of persons who are impersonalists, who are personalists, who are into demigod worship, who are into, you know, worshipping the ghosts, who are into, like, all these different things, is that the Vedas tells how to do all this. So you have to know also what is for the devotees. So that is given to us by the acharyas. So with that view and understanding, we have to approach the Smriti and the Shruti. Like that. So we have to follow this. Is that Rupa Goswami? Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi. Pancharatra, Vidhim Dina. So if it's not following these, the Shruti, the Smriti, the Pancharatra, the Puranas, then it actually has no meaning. So Rupa Goswami is basing the principles of devotional service, Sanatana Goswami is on the principles, on Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi, Pancharatra. Because this is where all the essences come. Krishna has spoken transcendental knowledge to Brahma in the form of the Veda. Though the Veda is spoken in a way that it will attract any pious person, whether they're personalists or impersonalists. You know, they're materialists or they're not interested in material nature. And any combination. So the meanings are not as necessarily as direct. They're there. One can, if one knows how to see, there's quite much directness is there. And in some places are written indirectly, though it's talking about God, just for the benefit of the non-devotees. So the essence is then given to us the example is given of this, how it's applied in the Puranas. And the essence of all that is in the Bhagavatam. So the Pancharatra, the Purana cannot be ignored. Then we told the story of when Brahma lost the Vedas, when they were stolen by Madhu. He asked that Krishna give him the essence first, then after teach him the whole Veda. So Krishna gave him the Pancharatra, which is the practical application. Right? The practical application then is the Pancharatra. How the philosophy translates into practical day-to-day life and activity is Pancharatra. And the Puranas, you know, that is how to take the Vedic knowledge and practically apply it in your life for spiritual benefit. And the essence of that being the Bhagavad Purana. And then the Smriti means taking the Veda and then how you will practically apply it in your life according to the various aspects. So in this aspect, according to religious codes of conduct, is practical application. So we see that the practical application is getting at the essence of the Veda. In other words, the Abhideya, or the application. Once we understand we're servant of God, to apply that in our life, that becomes very important. That becomes, you know, most important for us. So this aspect then is cannot be ignored. So it's coming from the Shruti. So the Smriti, Purana, and Pancharatra, he mentions those, right? You have Veda, Shruti, Smriti, Puranadi. So these three aspects are practically how to apply in your life. Puranas by example, Pancharatra by a system of ritual, and the Smriti by a system of conduct, codes of conduct, how social codes of conduct, individual and as a group. And that fairly nicely covers everything. Right? What you should do, how others have done it, and then you're going to have your technical rituals. The technicalities of how you're going to deal. Right? Scripture says you should take a bath. The Pancharatra then tells you technically how to do it. Right? We see in the Purana that Krishna and so many other great sages and personalities, they will take their bath. Right? When Krishna and Arjuna, Akrura and Krishna and all that are going from Mathura to, Vrindavan to Mathura. It's not that far. But they stop on the way to take a bath in the Jamuna. It's noontime. It's time to take bath. Right? So Krishna is taking bath. Right? So we see that. We see example there. He takes a bath. The Smriti Shastra says one should take a bath. The Pancharatra tells us technically how to do it. So we have the scriptures telling us, we have the example of it written in the scriptures, how people did it, and we have the technical rules how to do it. So the combination is very, very powerful, very important. Then human life knows how to work. So these have to match. And that's all based on the philosophical, the paravidya, the transcendental vidya. So that then is what all the others, so they have to match. They have to match. So when we have Krishna as the goal, we are servants of Krishna, serving, engaging the material nature in Krishna's service, and we have the process by performing that, then we see the Puranas, the Pancharatra, and the Smriti in relationship to the what the philosophy is. In this way, then we see if it works. So if it's not in line with all this, then we may have made a mistake. So the fault is never the scripture, right? The fault is not the scripture. The shlokas of the Gita or the Bhagavatam or the other Vedic literatures, if they're not applied properly, this fault is not the scriptures. The fault is ourselves, right? If someone takes a knife and misuses it, we may start a campaign against knives. But the actual fact is the knife is not the problem. The problem is the unqualified people using it. So this is the point. We may say, well, no one's qualified, so we should ban. But the point is no, we should learn how to use. We should know how to apply the scripture in our life. Then things become good. Otherwise, it's not. So it's very important, point is pointed out, is that we should not commit this fourth offense against the name, holy name, by blaspheming the scriptures or neglecting the scriptures. We should understand how to apply them. Otherwise, if not, then we should not deal with them. But we should not deal with them and not believe them. That is the point. You know, and it mentions here, therefore then, this knowledge of the religious principles, just like Pancharatra is not given to just anybody, and the Bhagavatam is not spoken to just anybody. It's spoken for those who are not given to the acquisition of wealth and gratification of the desires. So dharma kaitavo, what's it? Dharma? Projita kaitavo? Atra paramo nirmat saranam satam. So it means all cheating religion is thrown out. It doesn't say all religion is thrown out, it's all cheating religion. It means cheating means anything that's not going to give you Krishna. Any of the religious principles given in the scriptures that are not going to give you Krishna, that is thrown out. Why? Because that's not actually the religious codes are not meant actually for going to the heavenly planets, for becoming wealthy, for becoming famous, for getting a child. It's none of those. It's actually meant for pleasing Krishna. But for those who aren't interested in pleasing Krishna, and if you told them you do this, it'll please Krishna, they won't do it. Atheists and other such persons. So therefore, you say, oh, if you do this, then that will be, you know, you'll get a son, or you'll get wealth. Because it pleases Krishna, and this is what Krishna wants to reciprocate with. You understand Krishna has no birth. Right? Then what happens? You then take a transcendental form that has no birth or death. If you understand Krishna has no birth or death, you're rewarded with what? You get a transcendental form that has no birth or death. You understand Krishna's activities are transcendental, what are you rewarded with? That you are able to take part in the Lord's transcendental activities. Right? You understand that Krishna performs activities and they are not mundane. He is not bound by the material nature. Therefore, when we perform prescribed duties, we are not bound. You understand? So if we do things according to Krishna's rules, Krishna reciprocates. He says, as you surrender, I reciprocate. So if you surrender to Krishna for a material result, he reciprocates with a material result. But that's not actually what he wants to give. Right? That's not, he wants to give transcendental result. Therefore, even though he's giving the material result, still the living entity is not satisfied. Therefore, then the living entity starts to ask, why? and surrenders to the Lord, if he's fortunate. And if not, he concocts his own idea or throws out the Vedas like this. So the purpose is actually that. So that is how we must approach. When we read the Dharma Shastras, it has to be with the idea that all aspects that are dealing with the cheating Dharma is thrown out. It means when we read, you do this, you go to the heavenly planet, we don't care for that. If it's specifically meant for those who want to go to the heavenly planets, the whole thing we just disregard. And if it's just, this is a proper thing to do, but you will get this pious result, we ignore the pious result. Because Nishkam Karma Yoga means that whatever the fruit is, it's Krishna's. Right? By performing this activity, it's very pious, you go to the heavenly planet. That benefit of going to the heavenly planet is given to Krishna. So we don't go to the heavenly planet, we go back to Godhead. Right? Like that. So that's how we have to view. Rupa Goswami says one has to approach the previous acharyas through our own acharyas. So when we study this, we have to study it through how Prabhupada has given us. Prabhupada has given us the ideas, how the brahmacharya, how the, like this. He's given us the seed essential elements. And then with that, we can understand and we can expand the details. Because Prabhupada mentions in his books, when it comes to the social things, then we accept Manu, Parasara, Yajnavalkya. Because here, this knowledge is what has been given by Lord Krishna to Brahma. Brahma gave it to Bhrigu and Bhrigu is speaking it to us. Like that. So it's quite, we're getting it quite, you know, it's quite short in the parampara. Right? Krishna to Brahma, Brahma to Brihaspati. No, Bhrigu. And then that's what we're hearing. Like that. So we can understand it's there. But the point is Narad Muni pointed out to Vyasadeva, that you've written all these scriptures, but you didn't make it really clear what was the cheating aspects of religion means for the non-devotees. Non-devotees are cheating anyway. They're following the processes of worship that Krishna has given, but not using it to worship Krishna. It says cheating. So cheaters cheated. Right? Krishna says, of cheaters, I am the cheat. So he cheats them all. All the cheaters are cheated by Krishna. Because they're thinking, I'm going to do this ritual, I'm going to get some material benefit. Yes, Krishna will give it, but they won't be happy. So Krishna is the biggest cheater. They're small cheaters. They can cheat because Krishna can cheat, but Krishna is a bigger cheater. Because he's the original, he's God. So he tricks the non-devotees into thinking that they're very pious, wonderful, educated, and all that. But they're not. So like that. So this scripture then still has those elements in it. So one has to see it through the eyes that Prabhupada gives. Like Mahabharata. Mahabharata is also written before Bhagavatam. And in it is all, it's all Dharma. If you want to see the practical application of the Manu Samhita, practically every last rule and regulation, you'll see it in the Mahabharata. But we accept, Gaudiya Vaishnava, we accept Mahabharata. But we don't read it from the viewpoint as Mahabharata. We read the Mahabharata stories from the viewpoint of the Bhagavatam. We see the Pandavas from the spiritual light. Their activities in relationship to devotional service. So in the same way as the other Vedic literatures, that's how they have to be viewed. You know, Madhvacharya points out, when the Veda says, is offering respect to Agni, we understand that it's not Agni the demigod, it's Krishna who's Agni, who is the energies of fire and all these things. That potency is coming from him, so he is Agni. When it says Indra, it means Krishna. Because Indra is the king. When it says Shiva, it means Krishna, because he's all auspicious. So it doesn't mean these personalities. It actually means Vishnu. So in that way, you can read all and there's no problem, there's no contradiction. One just has to understand what is the actual meaning of the Veda. So same way as here, we have to actually understand that these are principles for human life, actually for the purpose of going back to Godhead. But because a lot of people aren't interested in going back to Godhead, they word them in such a way, in a very pleasant, poetic way, and with all kinds of fruits attached, so that people will be interested to follow them. At least they'll be pious and not give anybody trouble. And then a pious person may surrender to Krishna. Like that. So there, like this, we have to understand. So if there's a problem, it's in the application. You know? A misunderstanding of application. Misunderstanding of purpose. But never the scripture itself. Like that. Okay. Okay, so then he goes through here that discussing the when the about the child, because we started with who is the person who should study and follow this? What are their qualifications? So then he's going through. They've been conceived, you know, after with the Garbhodan ceremony. Then it's saying that by performing all these ceremonies that one is freed from the taints, so the conditioning of both parents. Then it goes through to describe that the Garbhodan Samskar, no, Jatakarma, that after birth, before the umbilical cord is cut, then one is fed with gold, honey, and butter. It creates intelligence. Like that is called Medha Yajna. Sometimes it's Jatakarma, but it's also called Medha Yajna. Means it gives intelligence. Like that, special mantra, because the whole idea is you're going to use your intelligence to understand the purpose of life. So right there, after birth, you know, before they're disconnected from the mother, then at that time they're fed this gold, honey, and butter. It means with a golden spoon, they're fed a mixture of butter and honey, that you feed them a chunk of gold. You feed on a golden spoon, you give that. And that combination creates intelligence.
Right.
Huh.
Is it specific who should give it?
The father gives.
So then after the baby's born, then he comes.
Means the father is the mentions in the scriptures. I don't know it mentions here. But that the father, the men, they should not see the child birth itself. You know, it said it'll shorten a man's life by half. Like that. You know, it's pretty wild. You know? Like that. I think Prabhupada also mentioned if the man had to go through that much pain, he would actually die. You know, the women are much more resilient actually to deal with the material nature. They can tolerate a lot more pain and anxiety. So men shouldn't, are not there. It's traditionally not their thing. So this whole, you know, this thing where you have men as gynecologists, it's improper. It's bogus. That's the ladies, they take care of these things. It's their business. So they're not there. But once the child is born, then the father comes and does all those pujas. But it's supposed to be the time before the umbilical cord is cut. Like that. After birth, but before the umbilical cord is cut. It's an interesting thing, because one would say, well, what's the importance of that? You know, it doesn't specifically say here, I haven't read in the Ayurveda. It means I haven't studied it. But while I was in where was it? I saw one that there was somebody, some lady has done research into the after birth, there's a special blood that comes through the umbilical cord. And they found that blood can produce medicines that cure, I forget what it is, cancer or leukemia, some far out diseases. So some really heavy diseases it can cure. So this lady was doing a research that after the child had born, they cut the umbilical cord, she was collecting that. You know? Because in the modern thing, as soon as they're born, they cut the cord. But here in the Vedic thing, the time that it takes for the father to come and recite the mantras and this and that, it'll be a few minutes. You know, 3 minutes, 5 minutes. But during that time, the child is getting that particular blood, that special blood. So that must protect them from all kinds of diseases and that. And so nowadays, because they cut it as soon as they're born, they don't get that benefit. So we see that also just even medically, that there is method to the Vedic things. You know, what it does, why it does it, there's a reason. And then that chemical combination at that time of butter, honey, and gold, then creates the intelligence. It starts the working of the development of strong intelligence. So this is done. It means that's why you should understand purposes behind things. If devotees knew that this is actually what's going on, they think this sounds really good, right? But because they don't know, who cares, you know? Like Prabhupada says, you know, they just in the hospital and the child is born and they wash him off with some Dettol, you know, and then they, you know, Hari Bol, you know, finished. Unceremoniously, like that. There's a purple, you've seen that? You come across that? Prabhupada just say it, just, you know, it's like that, no ritual, no nothing, just wipe him off with some antiseptic and finish. Like that. But it's supposed to be a ritual then, like that. Okay, and then after that is then giving the Namakarana, the name-giving ceremony, which is on the 10th or 12th day after birth, or on a lucky lunar day, means an auspicious day according to the moon, in a good muhurta, or under an auspicious constellation, means after that. Gopal Bhatta Goswami mentions that it can be after the 101st day of birth, or after the first year. It's a different, depending on your shastra you follow. Here it's specifically, you know, 10th or 12th day. These are like the first options, so immediately when they're born. Then it mentions that the names and that, the Brahman's name is denoting auspicious, the Kshatriya's name is connected with power, Vaishya's with wealth, and the Shudra's name is something just very ordinary. You know, it's not anything in particular, just something that you like. Like that. So it means it's just like you see, you know, Joe, John, you know, I mean, nothing really special, you know, Smith, Coleman, you know, Goldberg, you know, I mean, nothing really special. They're not specifically auspicious or this or that. Or, I guess Goldberg, you know, is denoting wealth, you know.
Mary Sue.
Yeah, like that. Yeah, so it's, you know, wealth, you know. Like that. And it says the second part of the name, the Brahman should be implying happiness, Kshatriya is implying protection, Vaishya is expressive of thriving, that inspires them, and a Shudra is an expression denoting service. So that's generally the Shudra's title is generally Dasa. You know, the Brahmins will be something else, you know. And Kshatriyas, Chakrabarti, and things like that to show that they're what do you call? You know, yeah. You know, that and then the... So the Das. So we, the Vaishnavs, because they're always in the mood of servant, we take that Shudra title, Shudra Dasa. But as a first name, we always take a name in connection with Krishna. Like that. So that's the main principle, is that we take a name in something as a Brahman's name, something auspicious. So Krishna's, who's the most auspicious. Krishna, Krishna's devotees, something in relationship to Krishna, a place, a pastime, you know, like Ganga Das, or, you know, Krishna Das, or, how you say, yeah, you know, something to do with his devotees, like that. So we take the Brahminical aspect there, and then we take the expression of denoting service, the Shudra's final name, das. So that's our, that's what we take out of this. Because as the the devotee, as we discussed before, the Brahman, you go through all this varnashram. So you have a conditioned nature and you have the consciousness that goes with the conditioned nature. Shudra has a certain conditioned nature, they have the consciousness that goes with it. They're just into their art. You know, it says, Krishna says in the Gita, one who takes a work is all in all. You know, it's in the mode of ignorance. So Shudra is influenced by the mode of ignorance. So they're just totally into whatever they're into. That's it. Their music, you know, their painting, their architecture, their, you know, digging trenches, whatever it is, it's just all in all for them. Like that. What was the thread here? Oh, yes. So then, Vaishya, they're just totally into economic development. Everything is geared around that. Kshatriya, in their power, protection, influence. Brahman, into his knowledge and disseminating that knowledge. But now when a Brahman realizes the purpose of the knowledge that he's knows and practices, then he becomes a devotee. He becomes a Vaishnava. So in consciousness we see the evolution from Shudra up to realize Brahman, that is a devotee. Right? So that's the thing. Now because devotional service is not connected with the body, it's connected with the soul. That means anybody has the opportunity to take up pure devotional service. Right? So that means because it's the nature of the soul, therefore we have this dichotomy. The dichotomy has been there from the beginning. You have the soul, who's Satchitananda, and you have the body, which is, you know, asat, achit, and, you know, misery. And we're trying to work it out with this and try to make some adjustments. It doesn't work. It hasn't worked. It won't work. So this dichotomy is there. So now what we find is the soul then surrenders to Krishna. But whatever the conditioned nature, the physical, intellectual, emotional nature that was there, that remains. We've just changed that. We understand our realization. Our consciousness goes to the topmost platform. Therefore, even let's say someone was a Vaishya, they become a devotee. So they have the consciousness of a realized Brahman, means a devotee, but they still have the physical, emotional, and intellectual conditioned nature of a Vaishya. Therefore, Krishna says, do your prescribed duty for Krishna. You're a devotee, you do things for Krishna. So he'll still do his business or Vaishya activities for Krishna. But the Vaishya, because he has the consciousness of a Vaishya, he wants the fruit. And it should be fruits in line with the Vaishya fruits. They want economic development. Right? That's why it says here. Vaishya's names are dealing with wealth and thriving. That's what they want. They want to see wealth, they want to see thriving and all this, and that's what they're very happy. So therefore, now the devotee doesn't have that consciousness. But he still has that nature for that kind of work. His conditioned nature. So he does that work, but he sees the fruit as Krishna's. Therefore, he's now, yesterday he was not a devotee, he was doing his business. Today he is a devotee, he's doing his business. But the difference is yesterday he wanted the fruit, and the fruit was his. And today, the fruit is Krishna's. This way, the one you become bound, when you think it's your fruit, and when you see it's Krishna's fruit, you become liberated. So by performing his work, he's becoming liberated. So this is the aspect. Therefore, we take these aspects like this. We take the Brahminical because everybody, doesn't matter what is their natural, their conditioned varnic nature, they're all realized Brahmins. So in consciousness, we all work on that platform. The goal, we work on that platform. And as the second name, we take the aspect of Shudra's service. Service unto others. So therefore, whether we're Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, or Shudra, we're doing all our prescribed duties as a servant of God, of Guru and Krishna and the Vaishnavas. The Brahman is Brahman. Kshatriya is Kshatriya. Vaishyas, Vaishyas. Shudra is serving the others. Shudra serves the Kshatriyas, Brahmins, and Vaishyas. But the Vaishnava serves God and the devotees. So therefore, everybody that. So we take the name Dasa as our final name, and we take the names of the Brahmins because they're in connection with Krishna's devotees. That is the most auspicious. Does that make some sense? So this is how the aspect of Namakarana works, like that, giving of the names. And it says here then, so this is specifically the names that you're giving the little kids, right? And then it mentions here, as it goes through, that all the, what they get is also for the ladies' names. There should be something easy to pronounce, not imply anything dreadful, possess a plain meaning, means it's very simple, straightforward, be pleasing and auspicious, end in long vowels and contain a word of benediction. You know? I think, what is it? Jashoda. What is that? Remember how that breaks down? It's a nice breakdown. Yeah, one who gives fame and glory. Yeah, one who gives fame. So, like that, we see that the names of the eternal associates are all along these kind of lines. And then we take their names as servants of them. Like that. So here, we still, when we take names, we don't take just some material thing. Like you see, mostly, it takes something like, you know, to do with flowers and creepers and this and that, and all very nice and pleasant things that are. So, but the same principle, because everybody is a realized servant of Krishna. So therefore the Brahminical titles also go. We take auspicious names, but in relationship to Krishna. So even the women's names are in relationship to Krishna and his devotees. Then in the fourth, then the next samskar is the Nishkramana. That's when he first leaves the house. The child stays in the house for 4 months. Means it would many times, depends upon the situation, depends on the families and this and that. Like we see Prabhupada. Prabhupada wasn't born in his own house. Prabhupada was born at, I forget, one of the aunt's houses or something. It's the only tradition they go out of the house and they're born somewhere else. Just like Lord Chaitanya was born under a neem tree. He wasn't born in the house. So they're born someone else, but they stay there, because then the child shouldn't move around and all this. One, the mother needs to rest and all that and get her health back together. And the child needs to become strong and be looked after. All the traveling, this and that, very bad for them. They don't get proper attention. And then so many people see them and so many, you know, subtle influences come. And the child is very new. It's not that strong. So all this subtle influence is very bad for him, and also the traveling and for the mother's health. So you put that together. So generally, they'll stay in one place for 4 months. Then the first time they go out, so generally going out is to the temple as devotees. Then Gopal Bhatta Goswami is taking that, that the child then will be taken by the father. You know, at least the ceremony, he'll, you know, when he goes out of the house. But when he comes before the deity, then there's mantras that you chant, and the father chants those and shows the baby to the Lord. So that the first time going out, then he's seen by God. Like that. Then after, goes here and there. So that's done at this time. So it said it should be performed in the 4th month. And then 6th month is the Anaprasana, first feeding of rice. And it says, optionally, any other auspicious ceremony required by the custom of the family. You know, some like to do some of the others, like maybe some will do the Namakarana at this time, this, that, somebody. So it gives some variation. But this is the basic things of what would happen. So the Anaprasana, then, is the purpose of, is that the digestion is the Lord. Krishna says he is the Vaishvanara. He is the fire of digestion. He controls the life airs that digest the foodstuffs. So out of recognition that the Lord is how you say? He is digesting all these things. We worship the Lord. We respect the Lord. The names, we understand that Krishna is influencing us through his, through the planets and all that. He is given the authority of these planets, so we respect those, but in relationship to Krishna, that he is the lord of these planets. And all the different planets, they have lords, like the sun. The actual lord of the sun is Ramachandra. The moon is Krishna. Mars is Nrsingadev. See, what do you call it? Mercury is Buddha. Then, what do you call it? Brihaspati? I think it's Kurma, no? Vamana, yeah, Vamana. And Sukra is Kurma.
Huh?
Shani is Kurma. Okay. Yeah, that's okay. That's, I somehow thought it was the other one. So like this, you have these different, they have their lord. So he is the lord of them. So you're respecting the lord through this. Now you're respecting the lord, he is the power of digestion. You know? So we see, he is the giver of intelligence. He is the, how you say, he is the how you say, he is the one who is controlling everything. He is the one that is digesting. So these different aspects are done. So we're respecting at these points. So the anaprasana ceremony then means the proper digestive ability. And according to Ayurveda, all diseases start in the stomach. So when the digestion is not proper, all diseases come. It means whatever it may be, according to your, you know, previous activities, you will get that particular group of diseases. But they all start in the stomach. Prabhupada said, overeating, anxiety, and uncleanliness. You know, you come in contact with something unclean, you know, you, how you say, you overeat, and his definition of overeating means more than you can digest. So if you can't digest one chapati, by eating one chapati, you have overeaten. So it's not necessarily volume, because someone like Bhima, he was a voracious eater. He could digest it, no problem. Or Madhvacharya, he could eat huge amounts. I think there was one time, was it Madhvacharya? Was it? He had a contest or something. He ate, I forget how many, 2,000 bananas or something like that, 4,000 bananas. And then he drank, I forget how many pots of kheer, another 20 pots of kheer or something. You know, so just, and he had no problem. You know, or what's his name? Augustia, right? Augustia is the size of a thumb. So then they were having problems with what's it? Not the Nachiketas? No, Nachiketas are the sages on the chariot wheel, no? Are they? The sun's chariot, the axle, that's the Nachiketas. So who are those? Oh, something Kavachas. Huh? Nivata Kavachas. They were a group of demons. They would go around the universe and they would hide under the ocean and no one could get them. I think Arjuna was brought. So then the demigods worked it out. It was a whole teamwork. So he can kill them as long as you can see them. And they're hiding under the ocean, so they wanted someone to do something with the ocean. So then Augustia, of course, comes forward, size of the thumb, says, don't worry, I'll take care of it. And then he goes there and says, tells Arjuna, are you ready? Like that. Here, maybe scoot over a little bit so you don't sit in front of Kunti. Yeah. Then he said, Arjuna's ready with his arrows. And then Augustia, I mean, doesn't have to bend over much. He just takes it in the palm of his hand and sucks up and drinks the whole ocean. It's just like dry. And then the, what did we call them? Nivatakavachas are just standing there, you know, on their own, and then Arjuna kills them. So then, but he digested it, you know, because they ask him afterwards, okay, put it back. He says, well, I've already digested it, you know. What am I supposed to do, you know? So it's means if you can take a lot, fine, as long as you can digest it. And if you can take a little, then you like that. So that's the point, overeating. So it starts from the stomach. So the anaprasana then becomes very important. Then it says next is the, let's see. Oh yeah, and then it says that the next thing is the shaving of the head.
says in the first or the third year.
So that is, because that hair is one is born with, then is not considered clean. So for the purpose of cleaning oneself, then that is shaved. But it's not done very early, because generally you see the top of the head is still very soft when the child is born, so that the head has to get strong enough to. So some people like to do it very early, but it's actually done minimum, for it says first or third year, even some say fifth year. So it's in like that, first, third, fifth, but you know, first is quite common. What is it? Sakriyasar mentions which year? Huh? First, third, fifth, all three. Like that. So they're all the different shastras mention, it doesn't matter. But it's after the first year. And then that's when it's considered, then one can come to the standard of good cleanliness. Otherwise, that hair is considered impure. I mean, all hair is impure, but that's more impure. Like that. Then it mentions, then after that, then there's the Upanayanam. So for a Brahmin, it's in the, says now here, it's mentioned according to conception. So in the eighth year after conception for a Brahmana, in the 11th after conception for a Kshatriya, and in the 12th for a Vaishya. In other words, when there's 7, 10, and 11 for the three of them. That is the early age when they would start the Gurukul. They would go to the Gurukul. They would get Upanayanam and then study the scriptures under the teacher. So then one would say, well, how come Prabhupada said 5? You know, here it says a Brahmin is 8, you know, Kshatriya 10 and a Vaishya 11, like that. Then it goes on to say here, says that if the Brahmana desires to become proficient in sacred learning, means in other words, if he only wants to just go and learn the Vedic texts, you know, and the basic little, you know, things that the Brahmana does, he can go to his eighth year. If he actually wants to become proficient and his interest is in spiritual realization of those texts, then it says here, then at 5. So then here's the scriptural backup for Prabhupada saying Gurukul begins at 5. So then the Brahmana, then it is earlier, at 5. That of a Kshatriya in the 6th, and that of a Vaishya in the 8th. In other words, you know, then that's from conception. So within the 8th year, then they would all come. You know? And we, as dealing in the realm as Brahmins, then they pick the earlier age. Like that. But otherwise, if the material conditioning is very strong, and one doesn't see a very, how do you say, very clean, the brahminical nature is not so strong in the child, then 1-2 years later, then can work. But otherwise, then that's what is there. Yeah. So it even mentions for the king, the kshatriya, they want to become powerful, then they'll go at this earlier age. And the vaishya wants to become wealthy, he'll go at the earlier age. Like that. So even we're talking about just materially getting it together, that the earlier they go, the better their character, the farther they get. Because it was interesting. Prem Vikash was telling me that there was the very, how you say, some big business management, you know, guru wrote a book, something, the 4 principles of business. Or business management, and they're very well discussed. And then some guy came out with a book called The 5th Principle of Business Management. The other 4 are correct, but there's a fifth principle. And he says that this principle you won't learn in any business school. And that is of controlling the senses. He was saying, you see, the top businessmen, the senses have to be somewhat controlled. because they can't just take the money, they can't just do anything, they got to put in huge amounts of time in the business and work very hard. So that controlling, that control has to be there. So when the Vaishya goes early, he has the control, he'll do better in business. The Kshatriya has the control, so therefore he can manage the country. Right? Like that. And the Brahmin, he'll become proficient, means he'll have realization in the scriptures, how to apply it. So that makes he'll become a devotee. If he only knows the scriptures, he's a vipra. If he realizes the scriptures, he's a devotee. He's a Vaishnava. So this is you know, an important aspect, is that both spiritual and material, both are based on following, being trained in culture and how to control the senses. Therefore, the brahmachari life, the whole emphasis is on controlling the senses. Because without that, control the senses, develop character, develop understanding of the scriptures, you don't get anywhere, neither spiritually nor materially. Right? Someone who has no determination, no respect for authority, you know, no control over his senses, can't work with anybody, you know, has his own ideas how to do anything. Generally, if you check around, anyone who's successful in any aspect in the material world then does not possess these qualities. They have determination, they have vision. You know, they have an ability to inspire and work with others. They have an ability to, you know, control their senses for a higher purpose. It still may be material, but still they're able to do that. So whatever you want, spiritual or material, like many times it's discussed, well, we want our children to be able to progress in the material world. And we want them to go out and get a job and go to higher education and this and that. But there aren't any examples of anyone ever doing it that didn't have some degree of character. You know? When you have your, you know, regular government karmi school, the kids that are really doing well and applying themselves aren't the crazy ones. They're the ones that just go to the class, behave nicely, take their homework, go home and study it. You know? They're not the ones that are wild and crazy and doing all kinds of stupid things. So in the material world, it also functions like that. Right? So this is the point is that whatever it is, this is the system. Because Krishna's created the material world, so he's created the system of how materially it works. You want wealth, right? You have to buy cheap. Sell expensive. No one can say, well, I don't like this system of business. You know, I mean, this is stupid. You know, why do we always have, why does everybody have to do it this way? Why I can't buy expensive and sell cheap? You know, why I have to follow all these norms? No, because that's the way Krishna made it. Right? That's the way Krishna made it. So Krishna has made the material world. It means he's made how it functions. So if you want to make it in the material world, you still have to follow Krishna's rules. So either follow them knowingly by following the Vedic codes, or you follow them unknowingly if you're fortunate enough that you just happen to follow the things that work. You just happen to understand the principle of buying cheap and selling more expensive. Right? There's plenty of people that don't understand that. They think they buy it cheap. They didn't buy it cheap. They thought they sold it expensive, but they didn't count into it all their transportation and then all their overheads. So they bought expensive and sold cheap, and their business fails. Right? So, like that. I mean, this is being, you know, quite simplistic, but the point is that Krishna has created the material world. So therefore, if you want to make it, whether spiritually or materially, still you have to follow Krishna. Because he says there's only one path. There's his path. There's not another path. He's not saying there's the material path and then there's my path. No. There's the one path. You can either use Krishna's path that's meant to serve him for material purposes. And because you do that, therefore the material energy punishes you. Because it's Krishna's. You're stealing from Krishna. You're using Krishna's intelligence, Krishna's senses, Krishna's emotions, Krishna's earth, water, fire, air, and ether. And you're using it for yourself. It's stealing. Therefore, material energy punishes. And if we take all that and use it for Krishna, what's the problem? Right? We ourselves get so conditioned to the things of intelligence is considered very good, and piety is very good, and this and that, that we can't understand, no, it's all Krishna's. Whatever it is. If it's engaged in Krishna's service, then we're benefited. Because it belongs to Krishna. You know? Like here, war is considered ghastly, but Arjuna is fighting for Krishna. And it's service. So when we give up, therefore there cannot be too much attachment or detachment. Because then, otherwise, we're too attached, it's hard to use in Krishna's service. We're too detached, we won't use it in Krishna's service. So we have to find that balance. It's a very important balance. So then here we go on. Yeah. So at the proper age, then... Yeah. Then the student then takes initiation, and this is called Dvija, twice born. So this is the lowest level of the Brahmana. He has the adhikar, or the right now to study and learn, but he doesn't know anything, you know, just like a devotee. They get second initiation today. Now they're qualified, they have the right now to perform deity worship. But it doesn't mean that they know anything about it. You know, they just know that you light some incense and you twirl it around and ring some bell, but that's about it. They don't really know what's going on. So when they study and know, then they're called Vipra. And when they realize that this is for Krishna and pleasing Krishna and coming from Krishna in connection with Krishna, then they become devotee. So like that, then the students, when they go to the school, the first stage is just they're qualified, then they study, and then they realize. So if you want the kid to realize, if he goes early, then that is the chance then is very, very good that one will get that. And if not, if one goes later, one will learn some academics, one will learn some vocational training, but the culture and the character may not develop so much. But the Vedas are very broad, is that you can take that time up to later. You know, the Brahmin has, if he still wants to learn to be a Brahmin, at least by within the 14th year after conception, he must start his Gurukul training. And for the Kshatriya, latest is the 22nd. And for the Vaishya, the 24th. Yeah, it means if they haven't, they've just been taught things, then they can still get something from it. Because a businessman, he has to get a little bit. He can still run his business, but, you know, anything like that. And if within this they haven't done, they're considered just fallen. You know, it's just not of any good character. So therefore, within this time, it should. So since we follow the Brahminical culture, the earlier we can take up, the better. But if not, okay. Just like we come in contact with Krishna consciousness sometimes in the late teens, early 20s. You know, so it happens. But because we're specifically following the Brahminical aspects of it, therefore, the earlier is, we always take those like that. So that's why when we get second initiation, along with that, then we get the Brahma Gayatri. Because already the age for the Brahma Gayatri is past. We're already considered fallen, patita. is it antyaja, fit for living in the forest or in the jungle, like that. So then, but because of Pancharatra, that changes the body. So it's a new birth. Then, because that is given, then one can accept the Brahma Gayatri. So the Brahma Gayatri is Vedic. Pancharatra is Pancharatric, and Hare Krishna is Bhagavad. So we're working on all three at once. So the Brahma Gayatri is for one who understands Brahman, who understands the scriptures, knows how to use them. But it's for specifically the right to study the Vedic scriptures. The Pancharatra is the right to perform the deity worship. And the Bhagavata is to chant the holy name, to remember, follow the, how you say, Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam, Vishnu. Like that. Does that make some sense? Bhagavad is the name. The Gayatri mantras, other than the Brahma Gayatri, those are Pancharatrik. It gives one the right to do the worship, deity worship. And the Vedic is generally is the right to study the scriptures. Means that Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur introduced that, so that the uneducated persons, like the smarta Brahmins and the Goswamis and that, would not offend the Vaishnavas by thinking that they are just some common people. So to show that they are actually better than the Brahmin, the realized Brahmin, then he gave him the sacred thread and the Brahma Gayatri. That's Vedic. The thread is only for the Vedic. It's not for the Pancharatrik. Pancharatrik doesn't require the thread. The Vedic does. But you'll see in the Pancharatrik things, the Brahmins would be doing the worship in the temples, so they've always already gone through the Upanayanam, so they have the thread for that. But the Pancharatra doesn't award the thread. You see pictures of the Acharyas before in that. They're from Brahmin families, where they received Upanayanam, they'd wear threads. If they weren't, they didn't. They received the Pancharatrik mantras, but not the Brahma Gayatri. Brahma Gayatri was Upanayanam. Their family was there, it was a tradition, they received it, they got it. If not, they didn't bother. Means in the tradition, means your Brahmin, especially nowadays, the Brahmin families, but Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya families would receive Upanayanam in the proper age. Then they become Dvija. Then when you take Pancharatrik initiation, then you become Tvija or Trija, thrice born, like that. So for us, because we missed out on the first one, then it doesn't work. So by the Pancharatra, that changes the body. Then you can get the lower one, which is the Vedic. So Vedic supports Pancharatra, and they both then support Bhagavad. So the everybody who received second initiation, we call second, or the Pancharatrik Diksha, then received the Brahma Gayatri. But otherwise, before that you always got Upanayanam before you got the Pancharatrik initiation. It's just the Brahma Gayatri. And then the kids would do the yajnas. They could deal with the fire. In other words, they could touch fire and deal with the sacred texts. And then, when they became mature, then they could receive Pancharatrik initiation and then worship the temple deity. Like that. Bhagavad doesn't matter. That you can chant at any time. That can be received at any stage.
But is there any corresponding
tradition? That? No, that's just always, just whenever. That would be given at any age. Whenever someone could seriously take up chanting.
Do we combine also the Namakarana with that? Or something?
See, Namakarana would be just the name given by the parent that you receive. Then with the Pancharatra, then you would specifically take a name that's in relationship to Krishna. Because you see in the Indian families, and they may perform Namakarana and give them some name. But then when they take the spiritual initiation, then they specifically get a name of Krishna. So we as a tradition just always use Krishna's names anyway for our kids and that. And then when the time of Pancharatrika initiation, sometimes the spiritual master will change it or add something to it, or sometimes even just leave it as it is. Point is the point of the Pancharatrika aspect is that we see ourselves in connection with Krishna, as a servant of Krishna. So the Namakarana has two aspects. I mean, Nama in Pancharatrika initiation means accepting the holy name and to chant it, and accepting a name, an identity as a servant of Krishna. So both those aspects are there. But this Namakarana is something done when, you know, a kid's 10, 12 days old. There's some name, and it can be, for us, we generally, it's always a name in relationship to Krishna and his devotees. Before, it just should be something auspicious or like that. Does that make any sense? Or? So when we follow it, we'll do it according to Krishna. We see Krishna is the most auspicious. Before, they were just, you know.
So the changing of the name at initiation is doesn't come under samskara.
No, it's under Pancharatrik samskara, but it's not under the Vedic samskara. Vedic samskara is done when we're very young.
When one takes it, first initiation, we call first initiation. It's not one of the samskara. Something separate.
It's part of Pancharatra. It's just that we take the Pancharatrik initiation. It's called Pancha Samskar, five samskars, and we take the first three, and that's considered first, and then the second, the fourth, and fifth is what we call second. The first three is tilak neck beads, chanting the holy name and receiving a name in relationship to Krishna, and then the fourth is the Pancharatrik mantras, and the fifth is the worship of the deity, yaga. So that combined together is the Pancharatrik initiation, is the Pancharatrik mantras. See, there's a difference. Nama means the holy name. Mantra means the Pancharatrik Gayatris. Like that. So that's how. Before it was all given at once. But with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, because in preaching, see, before it was, you know, the devotees would be sitting, they'd preach, and when somebody was serious, they would come. And, you know, the character, everything was much more developed. With Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, when they were preaching, then he saw that it was best to break it up. So that the first came at one time, and
he
then...
He broke it up.
Yeah, up to Bhaktivinoda it was both at once. It was just called Diksha, Pancharatrik Diksha. But he, with all five. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati broke it up. So Diksha specifically meant the last two, getting the Pancharatrik mantras and worshipping the deity. And the first one they called Harinam. Like that. It was also practiced before, you'd see that. That many, I think Shamananda, you know, he had his Nama Guru, you know. So he had Nama Guru and he had the Diksha Guru.
We do use Diksha Guru in the sense who gives initiation.
Yeah. So for us, the Nama Guru becomes the Diksha Guru. But before Prabhupada's, then the Nama Guru wasn't necessarily the one that gave Diksha. But the Nama Guru means when I say Prabhupada, I mean Prabhupada. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur then is Prabhupada's guru. I always refer like that.
I said before Prabhupada, there was not...
From Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur on back, the Nama Guru didn't necessarily have to be the one giving the diksha.
So in Gaudiya Math, they're still at that.
Means Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he gave Nama and diksha, so he followed like that. Before that, then the Nama may be from one person, the diksha from another. Like I think Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur got Nama from Bhakti Vinod Thakur, but diksha from Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. That's why sometimes it is said, you know, some will say he's received initiation from Bhakti Vinod, but he got Nama from Bhakti Vinod. He got diksha, the Pancharatri, from Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj. Like that. So that's not so important. But with Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he brought the both together.